essence of the Buddha teaching by that Brother Teo Ken Kun. Brother Teo Ken Kun graduated from University of Malaya in Civil Engineering in 1979. He has been a spiritual practitioner cum meditator since 1971. Since his retirement in 2001 from his engineering career, he has been sharing his understanding and experience with all who are keen in the search for the true happiness, peace, and liberation from birth and death, and all mental suffering to become a more virtuous, nobler, and wiser human beings. He gives talks and holds meditation and Dharma classes at various meditation centers. We'll please do invite Brother Teo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, good. A very good morning to all, brothers and sisters in the Dharma. I'd like to thank Brother Jim for the kind introduction. So once again, we meet. And today's topic is something quite unique, which I really felt we should develop the understanding as fellow Buddhists. The title of today's talk is Understanding the Essence of the Buddha's Teaching. When we talk about essence, means the core teaching, the main teaching. So as Buddhists, this topic is often not clearly understood. The whole of the Buddha's teaching, as shared and even discussed, are mainly very general. And you hear the teaching all over. But what constitutes the essence of the Buddha's teaching is very important. And to understand that, we need to penetrate the true understanding so that we can relate the essence of the Buddha's teaching. First, we need to understand clearly who is the Buddha. Here, the Buddha, in our Buddha Sasana, we are referring to Sakyamuni Buddha. And Sakyamuni Buddha is a very unique living being. According to the scripture or history's record, he was born in India in the year 543 BC, before Christ. Then now we are in the year 2015. So you add them together. It's about 2,500 years ago. And when he was born into this world, he was a prince. Then later on, when he saw the four signs, he decided to renounce the world. He left the palace. Then he became an ascetic. He seek to understand the reality of life and existence, because the four signs are very important understanding of life. For the first time in his life, after 29 years, he has never seen an old man. He has never seen a sick man, and he has never seen a dead man, and he never really had the understanding that all of living being has to go through all these phases, which he later on called the realities of life and existence. So the moment you are born, the following reality will continue. You will have to confront growing old, getting sick, and one day die. Then you have to confront with many other realities that he elaborated later on under his teaching when he became enlightened. So the first three signs, seeing an old man, a dead man, and a diseased person, actually transformed him. He like have a shock when he came to see them, and when the attendant explained to him, he said, "How come this person is so old, so haggard?" so useless, so miserable. Then the attendant say, he's an old man. He has gone through many years of living life, and he has become like that because this is aging. It's a natural process. Then straight away his nature told him, if that is the case, he has a problem. He cannot confront old age without problem. Then when he saw the sick man, it's worse still. He was so sick, so miserable, full of pain, suffering. And a lot of things is not right with the physical body. That he was told, every human being, if you live long enough, you will have to confront all this sickness, disease. Some can be very traumatic. Then the third one is the dead man. For the first time in his life, he come to understand that everybody must die. Then he said, all of the happiness that he has gone through, which the father, the king, has given him, they will have no meaning when he confront old age, sickness and death, because he has this problem. He cannot transcend life because he got no answer to getting old, getting sick and die. Then the last sign is he saw a renunciate, a samana, very serene, very calm, and renounced the world to seek the truth, to understand all this. So that immediately spurred him to go the same. That's why he renounced the world at the age of 29, left the palace. Then after 6 years, he managed to develop the meditative understanding and connect back to his nature, that he fully understood life. Then he realized all his sickness and death is not his problem, because it belongs to the form and mind, the human being, the human form and the human consciousness, which is not him. And when he realized that, his problem is resolved. Then he came to realize all these are conditioned arising phenomena in this universe. There is no necessity to deludedly grasp, cling and hold. Then life become meaningful. Life become beautiful. Then after he understood all this, because of his past perfection, he was able to teach this teaching to the world. That's how his teaching come about, the Buddha Dharma. Then he summarized all of his understanding into what he called the Four Noble Truths. This Four Noble Truths, I will write it down. Yeah? Because this is what the essence of his teaching is all about. So the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the Four Noble Truths. What are noble truths? Noble truths are truths that can make you enlightened. Because noble ones are called enlightened ones during the time of the Buddhas. That's the reason why the Pali word is Arya Satya. Satya is truth. Arya are noble ones. The Aryas are enlightened beings. They are very noble in all aspects of life. They are very noble in their understanding of life. That's why they understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, both the scientific law and the spiritual law. And he said, in this universe, there are only five great laws that governs life and existence. The first two, they are scientific law. The next three, they are spiritual law. And because of that, these enlightened beings, the noble ones, they have right view, right understanding with regards to this law. Then they like understand the secret of life. They know how to live. That's why they can arise all the appropriate right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, which are free of all negativity, which means they are very noble in the way they arise their speech, communicate with people, in the way they go about living their life, performing their action, meritorious action, wholesome action. They are incapable of negativity. Then they are very noble in the way they arise their thought process and their whatever activity in life. That's why they will have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the right effort to constantly purify, refine upon their whatever wholesomeness. And they will perfect all this. Then they develop mindfulness to enable them to see clearly all of their mental intention, mental state, to understand why living beings suffer, how they get themselves entangled through delusion. Then after that, when their mindfulness stabilizes, they develop samadhi. With sati and samadhi, their mind is very different. It becomes collected, unwavering, silent, still, and aware. And this type of mind can meditate, can understand things very well, can see things as they are, and insight into phenomena to awaken to their characteristics, the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, which in Pali, as we all know, is anicchang, dukkang, and anattam. So we have to ask ourselves, how did the Buddha understand all this? What makes him so unique? According to the scripture, and if you are a real cultivator who has gone this way, you will understand. Because according to him, after he became fully enlightened, after he connect back to his nature, the Buddha nature, he came to this world with a physical body and a mind, just like any living being. Like us. This he called the five aggregate of form and mind. And this one is karmically conditioned out for him to come. That's why this one is called Nimanakaya, the functional body that performed the function of the Buddha. Then when he used this body and mind to cultivate, when he connect, he developed the understanding, then he awakened. After he awakened means he has connect to his nature, the Buddha nature within, the original nature, the source of all things. Then he inherited all this perfection which he has cultivated for 3¾ asankhaya kappas or world system, aeons, many, many aeons. So when he has this connection, when he inherited all this, all his past cultivation and perfection came back to him because he has fully perfected the cultivation. That's why he is not only enlightened at that moment, he is fully enlightened, perfect in all aspects of wisdom and understanding. And you can say at that time when he awakened, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. And he got 9 great virtues, like you all chant just now in your opening puja. You chant the salutation to the Buddha, Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho, followed by the rest. This 9 great virtues makes him very unique. He is the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. He is worthy of respect, offering, and all those things. Then he is endowed with wisdom and virtue. Then he is a guide incomparable, a teacher of man and God. Fully perfect, with the all-knowing understanding. That's why that is the reason why Sakyamuni Buddha, when he arrives, he has this fantastic wisdom. That's why he can summarize all of his understanding into just the Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths is the essence of his teaching. Because within this Four Noble Truths, he said, If you can understand this Four Noble Truths, you will become noble ones, enlightened ones. Because these are the secret of life. When you understand this Four Noble Truths, you understand life. You understand the secret of life. You know how to live life. That's why this teaching is very unique, and it can benefit every living being, not only human being. And it will free you from all suffering. It will liberate your mind and transform you very, very deeply or radically, personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise. You become completely different. Because the moment you understand this essential Dhamma or essence of his teaching, you will never go back to the old way. You will not allow heedlessness and delusion to manipulate your life, to entangle you into suffering and misery anymore. So now, we will go into this topic, understanding the essence of the Buddha's teaching, so that when you understand this teaching, you understand the secret of life. Here, the secret of life means all of life, whatever that you have gone through and experienced, both the mundane and the supramundane, they are all within this Four Noble Truths. And nothing is apart from this Four Noble Truths. That's why you will understand, you will come to understand after you penetrate this teaching, that he is so wise. The Buddha is so beautiful. And he can just share this with the world free. This is the only thing that I came across in life, which is really free. They used to say there is no such thing as a free lunch. This is free, more than lunch. It can really, really awaken you and transform you. And this one money cannot buy, priceless. That's why this teaching is very unique. So as a Buddhist, we should thank our good karma. We should have a lot of gratitude and respect for the Buddha, where he is such a great being, such a kind, compassionate and wise being. And he has given to the world such beautiful message. So when we Buddhists understand this teaching, we are very proud to be a Buddhist. Because I realize a lot of people are very shy when they ask them, "Oh, you Buddhist, huh?" The first thing that comes to mind is what? You, like our first generation parent, idol worshipper. You go temple, pray, and make all those offerings. That is not Buddhism. That is nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching. Those are mainly traditional practices, Chinese tradition and beliefs. But when it comes to the teaching, it has nothing to do with that. So now I will zero in this Four Noble Truths. The first Noble Truth, as you all understand, is the Noble Truth of suffering, correct or not? So what is your understanding of the first Noble Truth based on what you have learned? Anybody want to try to answer that? Huh? First Noble Truth. No response. I often hear this. You all agree or not? Life is suffering. Huh? Ah, you heard this before. Do you think that is the first Noble Truth? That is not the first Noble Truth. That is a wrong understanding of the first Noble Truth. The Buddha never say life is suffering. The Buddha say there is a Noble Truth that talk about suffering. Noble Truth. Or suffering or dukkha. So this one, the word suffering, the Pali word is more accurate, dukkha. Dukkha is not only suffering, it's unsatisfactoriness. Even when you have pleasant experience, you are not suffering. It's a prelude to suffering. By itself, that positive craving is suffering, dukkha. But because you have not meditated, your mind is not sensitive enough. You cannot feel them. You cannot feel the suffering within. all these mind states. So this noble truth of suffering, the Buddha also translated it as the realities of life and existence. Realities of life and existence. Here he's referring to all of the mundane reality, the worldly realities. So the Buddha said, in life, when you go through life, you will have to confront these realities. And nobody can be free from it. As long as you live long enough, you have to confront them. I'm sure most of you being Buddhists, you must have heard of this first noble truth reality, the eight reality. What are they? The first four very easy, birth, old age, sickness and death. And this one, a lot of traditional Chinese, olden day, our parents, they all, or our grandparents, the first generation, they don't want to talk about it. They say, choi, 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 don't talk about death on Chinese New Year, on auspicious occasion. Well, these are the things that they fear. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to face and confront that reality. But life is such, the Buddha said. The moment you are born, if you live long enough, your body will go the way of nature. It will go through aging. It will experience disease, sickness. Then it will have to go through pending death. And finally, death. And you cannot understand the reality of birth, old age, sickness and death when you confront them, the Buddha said. Suffering will arise. But he never said life is suffering. He said there is a noble truth that explains to you clearly the possibility of suffering, the prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere in the world. But life is not suffering. You need not suffer when you have the wisdom and the understanding of his teaching. That's why the next noble truth, which is the second noble truth, the Buddha explained clearly to the living beings. He said, whatever suffering that you have encountered, there is a cause behind. So the second noble truth talks about the cause of arising of suffering. So when you understand what suffering is and the cause behind its arising, you will at least have some form of understanding, even knowledge-wise, or the contemplative wisdom if you have done the cultivation of the second and the first turning of the Four Noble Truths. Then you will know how to manage your life better. Because when you know what constitutes suffering, this is a noble truth, then you know the cause behind, which the Buddha said is craving. Craving born of self-delusion. Self-delusion is Sakkaya Ditthi. Craving, there are three types. The first type is sensual craving, kama tanha. Tanha is craving in Pali. Then there is another two that afflicts the human being a lot, bhava tanha and vibhava tanha. But they translate as craving for existence and craving for non-existence. To me, that is not the appropriate translation. Bhava tanha and vibhava tanha is craving to be, to become something, and craving not to become that thing. It's becoming. That's why bhava is becoming. So craving is the main culprit, born of self-delusion, and craving lead to attachment, clinging, grasping. This is the positive craving, lust and all those things. Then the negative craving is your ill will, your hatred, your anger, your whatever, envy and jealousy, negativity of mind. Then lastly is born of delusion, that condition of these three craving. That's why it triggers off fear, worry, anxiety, because you believe there is a human being, self-delusion, that condition you to believe that this so-called human being or the form and mind that you take to come to this world is real, is what you are. And because of that, this self-delusion will condition you to have craving. That's how the entity, the ego, the personality, the sakyadity, give rise to this so-called delusion that make you believe you are real, you exist. That's how this entity become a human being, and they identify you with a name, with your physical body, the physical form, Chinese, male, middle age, or whatever. Then through your mental conditioning, your views, your religious belief system, then they call you Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Muslim, and all those things. And because of this self-delusion, you develop a personality that conditions you to crave for things. You become possessive. You want to own things. You want to have things. That's how greed, the evil roots, possessiveness, desire, covetousness, grasping, clinging comes about. And because you think you exist, when people say wrong thing about you or commented or blame you, hit out at you, you develop anger, hatred. Then when you see things that you think is disadvantage to you and you want to own and possess, then you develop envy and jealousy. And all these are negative mind state, the hatred and all these things. These are the evil roots of anger or ill will. Then at times, because when things don't go your way, you develop fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. And this is what delusion is all about. So self-delusion can trigger off the cause of suffering. And if you fail to understand this, you will never understand why you suffer. That's why living beings got themselves entangled in life. And they have to go through this first noble truth, reality of suffering, unnecessarily, because the Buddha said suffering need not be. There is a third noble truth that explains clearly to you what enlightenment in the here and the now is all about. There is a noble truth that talks about enlightenment in the here and the now. In the here and the now, Nibbana can be realized. So this third noble truth is very important, it's very comforting. It gives you a lot of what they call joy, because you have this understanding that suffering need not be. If I develop this understanding, and enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized, so that your mind can liberate and develop the awakening. So this part is very reassuring. And this is the thing that the Buddha realized. That's why he told the living being, life need not be this way. When you are deluded, when you have ignorance, when you have self-delusion, you went through life without understanding. You don't have this teaching. That's why you suffer unnecessarily. You cannot confront the reality of birth, old age, sickness and death. I will come to the reality later. I want you to have the full picture first. Then the Buddha said, the moment you penetrate this self-delusion, all this reality will fail to deceive you. They will fail to entangle your form and mind. That's why this form and mind with this wisdom, when it awakens to the universal characteristic and to the understanding of this Four Noble Truths, it is no longer deluded. It will have the wisdom and the understanding to awaken. Then this mind is liberated. It will realize this enlightenment, which is Nibbana, the cessation of form and mind. And when your mind realizes this cessation, even for one moment, split second, momentary cessation, you already transform, change of lineage from a Puttajana to an Arya, means from an unenlightened being to an enlightened being. So this possibility is very, very important. Then the Buddha didn't stop there. He said, there is a fourth noble truth that finally explained the whole thing. He said, there is a noble eightfold path. If you cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Cultivate it. It will lead to the end of all suffering. Which is the liberated mind. The enlightenment in the here and the now. So you look at all this Four Noble Truths, you will come to understand why I say it's the secret of life. Because the first noble truth, the realities of life and existence, explain clearly to you all of life within the conditioned world that each and every one of us have gone through and experienced, or even before you later on have to separate from this form and mind that the living being called death. They are never apart from this reality. So this one summarizes to you all of life within the conditioned world. Then the second noble truth explains to you how living beings that don't have this understanding and wisdom or teaching will get themselves entangled and become miserable. That's why the cause of suffering is very important and this teaching is very important. Then the third one is about enlightenment in the here and the now. Then the fourth one is how to cultivate your mind to develop this enlightenment. So the moment you realize this enlightenment, these two become the supramundane. That's why you will understand all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane. And you become a perfect human being. And you become a noble one, enlightened one. And this is the reason why the teaching is so powerful and it can make such a great difference to our life. With this understanding, we don't have to fear anything. We don't have to believe anything. Everything is very natural. Follow nature's law. So the Buddha's teaching comes from his understanding of nature's law. He said, first, there is nature, the four aspects of nature. When you understand there is nature, Mother Nature, then you understand this is what existence is all about. This is what the universe is all about. The whole of creation. Then after that, the Buddha said there are five nature's order that governs life and existence. Nature's law that governs nature. And this one, there are five, he said, spiritual law and scientific law. The first two is Bija Niyama. Oh, sorry, Utu Niyama, which is the physical law of nature. Then Bija Niyama, which is the biological order of nature. The scientists are very good at this. They have progressed very far, penetrated very far. That's why science and technology has actually transformed our civilization. That's why the last 30, 40 years, the advancement of science and technology is so marvelous, so amazing. And we are the lucky generation that can see the old and the new. We can experience the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. Then now we get to reap the fruit of our hard work, to experience the 80s, the 90s, the 2000 and beyond. And life has become so different. And like what we went through, every year is different. Things are progressing so fast. Civilization has evolved so fast. Consciousness has evolved so fast. So when you understand science and technology, we progress very fast. Likewise, the Buddha understood the three subsequent spiritual laws. The third one is Karma Niyama, which is law of karma. Then the fourth one is Citta Niyama, law of the mind, how you function as a human being, how your consciousness behaves, how your mind state arise and pass away dependent on the certain condition. Then the last one is Dhamma Niyama, nature's order of truth. When he understood these three spiritual laws, he, just like the scientists, become expert in it, and he progressed very far. That's why the Buddha can become the Sammasambuddha, the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. And he can summarize all his teaching into just Four Noble Truths, the essence of his teaching. And he became so beautiful that he understands all of life, the secret of life. That's why he is a great blessing to all of humanity, all of living beings. Then like just now I said, when he came to this world, he was like us, just a normal human being with a form and mind. And this is his functional body, Nimanakaya. Then when he meditated and connected 6 years later and become the fully enlightened one, he inherited all of the spiritual understanding, which the Buddha calls Sambhogayakaya. So when that one manifests within this functional body of Nimanakaya, he becomes the Dhammakaya, the Sammasambuddha that speaks the Dhamma, proclaims the Dhamma, shares the Dhamma with the world. And this is how the teaching comes to the world. And we call this the Buddha Sasana, where the teaching is still around, where the sasana is still around. And sometimes we use the word the dispensation of the Buddha. So now I will go into the detail of the Four Noble Truths. Yeah. So this first Noble Truth that talks about the Noble Truth of suffering, the realities of life and existence, you need to develop understanding. We have to reflect, contemplate deep into what the Buddha has proclaimed. So the Buddha said to understand this teaching, you have to develop them through the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. Each and every of these Noble Truths, he turned it three times. That's why it's called the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. And these three turnings correspond to the three types of wisdom. The first turning is after listening to the teaching as proclaimed by the Buddha. Through listening. In the time of the Buddha, you can only listen. You cannot read because there is no writing, there is no book. So through listening to the Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha, you have that past inherent understanding. You can understand and you can awaken. And this type of wisdom is called Sutta-maya Panya, wisdom born of listening to the sutta. The sutta are the discourse of the Buddha. If upon listening you can awaken, means you have special past affinity and cultivation that enable you to have the condition to receive truth this way. Just like Venerable Kundanya, when the Buddha proclaimed the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he straight away awakened and became a Sotapan before even the Buddha finished that sermon. Then later on, the Buddha followed up with the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. All five ascetic become arahant. So you may ask the question, hey, Brother Teo, like that, no need to meditate. We sit there, listen, like the five ascetic, all can become arahant. True or not? You also hope it can be done, isn't it? Yeah? How many of you want that to happen? Well, all. But you must understand, this ascetic and this monk, they also cultivated long, long period of birth and death. They also had their past cultivation and parami. That's why first turning can be so powerful, so potent. So the Buddha proclaimed birth, old age, sickness and death. Now you listen. These are the realities that you will confront in life. And if you don't have the wisdom, it will bring forth suffering. Then the fifth one is, when you go through life, you will encounter separation, the Buddha said. Separation from your loved ones in the form of relationship failure, like divorce. Or separation due to situation that warrants it, forced separation, like in time of war, tsunami, flood, building collapse, and all those things, or riots. The other one is death. Upon death, there is separation, and that can be very traumatic if you go through life. It can be your loved ones, the sole breadwinner of your family, or somebody you love so much, your children, your spouse, your brothers, your sister, your good friend. That separation can also happen to the thing you own, your wealth, your property, your career, your business. Whatever thing that you hold on dearly. During economic crisis, due to cash flow problem, your business can be wiped out. You can lose everything that you own. When you make a wrong decision in life, you make mistake in life, your whole reputation can be ruined. When you commit certain wrong thing that violates the society's law, you can be punished. And you can also be afflicted because they will put you in jail. And there is separation from your loved one and all those things. So all these are possibility of separation. And this can be very traumatic. Then the Buddha moved on, he said, when you are with people whom you don't like, it's just like in your working environment, career environment, when you have bosses that are not so understanding, where they really push you, pressure you, and demand a lot of things from you. We used to hear this, management by fear and harassment. They not only harass you, they put fear in you because they know you need the job, you need the salary. Then there is also what they call problems of mother-in-law, problem of step-parents, problems of bullies or gangsterism in the school where your children, the school-going children, have to confront. So these are people whom you don't like. Then there are those people who bullies, who who actually with authority bully you and take advantage of you. That's why there is sexual harassment even in the office environment. So all these are the realities. When you confront without understanding, you will be afflicted. And there is a lot of fear, a lot of phobia, and it can be very traumatic. Then the seventh one is even worse. Every day people experience it. When you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met, you become miserable, you become afflicted, you become very unhappy. You expect to be promoted. You are not the one. Somebody else whom you think is less eligible get promoted. You expect to be loved. The love is not forthcoming. You expect your spouse to understand you, to remember your birthday. You expect all those whom you have relationship to understand you, to love you, to help you, to see you in time of need, but they are not forthcoming. Then your thought project and create all the sadness, sorrow, lamentation. Then when you have health problem, as you go through old age, sickness and death, you develop a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety. The fear of death, the fear of suffering, the fear of financial problem. So all these are life-related problems. It can be health problem, financial problem, relationship problem, career problem, even all of life problem, like your children's problem, later on your grandchildren's problem. Then whatever you own give you problem. Where you attach to your property, your wealth, anything goes wrong to this thing, even to your loved ones, or the thing that you cherish and hold on to dearly, your property, your wealth, your investment, your business. The moment there is a threat of separation, you become afflicted, miserable. So these are the noble truths, the Buddha said. As you go through life, you will have to confront them. And when you confront them without understanding, you become miserable. But when you confront them with understanding, you become beautiful. You don't have to suffer. Then life can still be what it is when you have this understanding, which means you can come to terms with all this reality, because these are the reality of life and existence. The moment you don't have sakkayaditi, self-delusion, you don't project your thought, you don't grasp, cling, and hold deludedly, your mind is at peace. Your mind will not have any suffering. But living beings, because they lack this understanding, they never train their mind, they never meditate, they don't have this dhamma, they don't have this contemplative wisdom, which is the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, they fail to develop the understanding to confront them. So just now what I talk about is the first turning. After the Buddha proclaimed this reality of life and existence, the eighth time. Yeah? How many of you have some form of understanding of life after that? Yeah? That is the first turning after hearing. These are the reality of life and existence. What the Buddha is trying to tell you is, you are not the only living being in this world that have to confront this reality. Each and every living being, irrespective of their status, irrespective of their wealth, position, and honor, they still have to confront this reality. That's why the rich and the poor, they go through the same reality. So the difference between one who suffers and one who doesn't suffer is the understanding part. If you don't have this Buddha Dharma, this understanding, you will become afflicted. That is the first noble truth. But when you have this understanding, suffering need not be. Life is beautiful. Life is meaningful. Life is wonderful. So this is the teaching that can transform you, that can prevent you from unnecessary suffering, that can liberate your mind and make you beautiful. So the first turning is for you to develop the understanding through what you have heard. But nowadays we are more fortunate. We are more lucky. We have technological advancement. We have language. We have writing. We can print books. We can do up all the transcript of all this talk. In the Buddha's time, if you miss the talk, you have to wait till Ananda repeat it for you. And if you don't have the condition to be in the place where the Buddha is, the northern part of India, and that time, 2,600 or 500 years ago, they don't have flight technology like us now. 4 hours, 6 hours, maximum 8 hours, you reach Delhi or Kathmandu. That one, you go by ship. Even who is that guy who sailed around the world? Columbus, is it? Christopher Columbus. He haven't even mapped out the world. No? So how can you really, really have that possibility of going to India? You have to cross that Indian Ocean. So flight technology has made things so much easier. Down there is recording. Even you don't attend my talk, you can listen to the recording. Then there are also transcript book that has been transcribed for you to slowly read through. So now the first turning become easier. You not only can listen while it's been spoken, you can also read it out. Then you can also turn it on for re-listening because it's all recorded. Now they got MP3, they got Dropbox and all those things. Things has become a lot easier. So technology, if you know how to use, is conducive for Dhamma. That's why I don't blame technology. The user of technology is very important. Just like what the Buddha taught later on, the Noble Eightfold Path. You are born with a form and a mind, which is the thought process, the consciousness. These are for you to use. So use it appropriately, wisely, to arise the right thought. Not to arise the wrong thought, the unwholesome thought, the negative thought, that bring about not only suffering to yourself, but also to the world, to others, to all of humanity and its environment. So this first turning nowadays has been expanded. That's why I say you are indeed very blessed. Then with the internet, now you can search for many things, but you have to be very, very careful. Because not everything in the internet is the truth. You have to screen through with wisdom. You have to cultivate, investigate, so that you know which are the true teaching. If it's the truth, like the Buddha said, when you investigate into it, ehi pasiko, he invites you to come and investigate. Because it is the truth. He will stand up the investigation. So this first turning, the Buddha said, if it can awaken you, then you receive the first type of wisdom called Suttamaya Panya. Wisdom born of hearing the Sutta. And now you can read about it. Re-listen to it. Then if you cannot awaken or benefit much, he said you can go back and reflect on what he has spoken. Contemplate into it. And inquire deep into it. This is the second turning wisdom. Wisdom born of constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the proclamation of truth that the Buddha has given to us, this teaching. So because of language, because of writing, because of books, you can take your time to slowly study them like you study them in the school and the university. Then if you don't understand, you can have Dhamma discussion. You can listen to Dhamma, straighten your view. Then you can investigate into it and develop the appropriate understanding. So this second turning wisdom is called Chintamaya Panya. I will lead you into some of this. When the Buddha said birth is suffering, you have to inquire, why did the Buddha say that? Is it the truth? How can I develop the understanding of this? Birth, always sickness and death. If you have gone through life, when you reflect and contemplate on birth, you will develop understanding. Then this understanding will stabilize. That's how it becomes second turning wisdom. For a woman or lady who has gone through the birth process, the delivery, they will understand better. Where they will be able to tell you clearly why birth is suffering. And there are so many instances of birth which is suffering can be manifested. The mother that go through the delivery, they have to carry the baby for 9 to 10 months unless it's premature. Even premature, it has its consequence. And when the parent, the mother, carry the baby or the fetus in the womb, they have to go through so much suffering, the morning sickness, the immobility, as the pregnancy take place, the hormone release, and how the baby kick them and do all those things, then how they create severe morning sickness. Then the birth process itself is full of suffering, full of pain. Then when the birth process doesn't go in accordance, if there is complication, there is fear of pending problem or death to the fetus or the parent, then the worst dilemma is when the doctor tells you, you have to make a choice. I can only help you to do one thing, either save the baby or the mother. That is the most traumatic experience the living being go through. Both are your loved ones. So that type of dilemma is not easy to choose when you don't have the understanding. But now medical science has helped and simplified many things. They can help you to do the birth through cesarean and all those things. Then we have to reflect on the second one. As we get old, is there really suffering? To the young people, they will laugh at it. No need to worry. When I get old, only I worry. But it's just like we just graduate from university. When I look back, it's already almost 30 over to 40 years ago. The day I went into the university, 1975, 41 years ago, the day I graduated, 1979, that is 37 years ago, or 36 years ago. So time flies. Then as you go through middle age, as you break 50, you start to experience many, many things related to old age sickness, then pending death. So I used to have this analogy, when you're young, you cannot walk, you learn how to crawl, then you learn how to walk. Then when you grow up, when you know how to walk, you start to walk to kindergarten. Or you are lucky, they fetch you there. In the kindergarten, you still walk. So you walk a lot in the kindergarten. Then later on, you went to school, you walk in and out of school. Then you went to the university, you walk in and out of university. Then you graduate, you work, you walk in and out of office building. Then later on, as you work, you get old, what you do? You walk in and out of hospital, specialty center, again you walk. Then later on, when you have this sickness and old age, paralysis, you cannot walk. Then they said, no need to walk. They will cremate you, or they will bury you. Life is about walking. The moment you cannot walk, that is more or less the far end of life. So these are the reality. So you have to understand, if you have wealth, you don't know how to use for the good of yourself, your loved one, and the many, then money in the bank is not your money. Then they used to say, if you don't know how to spend your money wisely, end of the day, you still spend it. When you are not able to walk, travel, and do all those things that you want to do, when you are lying down in the hospital, you spend a lot more inside there. And it can be very, very costly. I have heard this private sector bill. One day, at least 1,000. you stay inside ICU. Then you go through operation, worse still. One operation can be 20, 30, 40,000. Some 100 over 1,000 chemo. My classmate told me the son have to go through that. He said he got to stand by at least 100K. Wow. I said, nowadays chemo so expensive. Yeah, he said, you got no money, don't get sick. It's very expensive to get sick. And it's even more expensive to die. Correct or not? Nowadays, the funeral is not cheap. So all these are the realities of life and existence. Sooner or later, you don't think it won't happen. Sooner or later, it will hit you, it will confront you. Then you have experienced disease and suffering, very traumatic. Nowadays, cancer is very common, SJBA especially. You have a lot of people with this type of problem coming to you. Depression, suffering, misery, separation and all those things. And a lot of very chronic cases. These are all the result of the reality of birth, old age, sickness and death. Followed by separation. Followed by when you are with people whom you don't like. When you cannot get what you want. Then the last reality, the eighth one, the Buddha said. This last one is very important. It's meditation. It's to penetrate the teaching. He said, in short, the Buddha said, I can summarize to you all these first seven realities. The moment you understand the last one, he said, which is the meditative understanding, his teaching, the first seven is chicken feet, no more problem. All will be resolved. So the last one is, he said, in short, he summarized all of suffering. All of suffering arise because of your self-delusion. Sakkāditti. That condition you to grasp and cling with craving to the five aggregate of form and mind, which is this human being of what you are, the physical body and the mind and the consciousness. And this is the first aspect of the form and mind. Then the second aspect is the mental form. You have to silence your mind, meditate to understand all this. That way you can penetrate and develop the clear understanding and insight into the characteristics of impermanence, suffering state and non-self. You will awaken. Then you will understand this is not you. You will have clarity of mind to understand that this human form and mind, which is what you think you are, is not really you. It is non-self, anatta. And when you can understand this, life becomes beautiful. You don't have to worry about this form getting old, getting sick and die, because this belongs to the physical body, not you. Then consciousness cannot die. Feeling, perception, sankhara and consciousness, the aggregates of mind, they come and go, come and go. They are conditioned arising, dependent, originating. When they arise and pass away, you never die. That's why they are not you, according to Anatta Lakkhana. Sutta. The Buddha asked, is form self? Is feeling self? Are your perception self? Are your sankhara, mental state, mental intention, all of those mental content that you arise, are they self? Is consciousness that arises with every moment of sense experience self? Then the monk said, didn't know. Then the Buddha said, if it's self, it will not lead to suffering. Then they realize these are non-self. Because if it's self, you have complete control in it. You want it to be task and not otherwise. It will behave. But this body, when you want to get sick, you want to get old, and it's about to die, it never asks permission from you. That's how it goes the way of nature. It doesn't belong to you. You say, don't think, you will think more. You say, don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. In the Cantonese version, choi le tung hong, is it? Because this one is not you, it goes the way of nature. That's why when you have this understanding, he said, first you must inquire deep through the second turning. How can I understand this final summary of the Buddha? I must understand what constitutes the five aggregate of form and mind. Then only I can put it to test. If I were to hold on to any of this aggregate like this body, if I believe it is me, do I suffer? Do I have a problem? If you think this is you, which normal living beings do through self-delusion, what happens? They will suffer. They will become miserable when there is health problem, pending death, financial problem, and all those things. You worry about this physical body getting old, getting sick and die, not able to meet your financial obligation, not able to resolve your misunderstanding with your loved ones or your career problem and all those things. So all this reality, they will hit when you don't develop the wisdom and the understanding. That's why when you start to develop the training of the mind to meditate on the five aggregate of form and mind, then you will start to understand clearly when you are not deluded by what this thing is, when you have understood the three universal characteristics following the Buddha's teaching, then you will awaken and become different. Then life becomes different. You take a turn. Then you become beautiful. Then you transform personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise. Then you can live life accordance with what the Buddha has taught you, the fourth noble truth. When you live in accordance with this fourth noble truth, when this noble eightfold path has been cultivated and become part of you, you become beautiful. And this is how you end all suffering. And this is the meditation that will lead to the enlightenment. So now I'm more or less finished. I only have to cover the third turning. I have finished the first two turning. Proclamation of truth leading to Suttamaya Panya. Contemplation, reflection, and inquiry on this truth leading to Chintamaya Panya, the second turning wisdom. Then the third turning, the Buddha said, you have to meditate. That's why we have to come to the final summary. He said, this wisdom of the third turning is born of bhavana, which is meditation. It's called wisdom born of bhavana, meditation. Bhavana, maya, panya. So this one you must cultivate. It will lead to the awakening, the enlightenment. That's why the Buddha said in the first turning, the first noble truth, there is a noble truth of suffering which he has proclaimed, the eight reality. Yeah. You must go through it. Then the second turning, this noble truth of suffering, the Buddha said, is to be understood. How to understand? You have to inquire, contemplate, reflect. That's how the second turning come about. Then the third turning, the Buddha turned it this way. He said, this noble truth of suffering has already been understood. Means what? You have meditated, you have awakened. Means you know what suffering is. You know the cause behind all of suffering. You know how to end suffering, cessation leading to enlightenment. Then he even teaches you how to do it. There is a path that leads to the end of all suffering. That's how the third turning is all about enlightenment. Even the second noble truth, he said, proclamation, all of suffering arise because of craving, born of self-delusion. Then second turning, this craving is to be abandoned or severed. Then the third turning is, this craving has already been abandoned or severed. Means you already awakened through meditation. So the third noble truth is the same. He says, this noble truth of enlightenment, the end of all suffering, has been proclaimed. Then the Buddha in the second turning, he said, this realization of Nibbana, which is the end of suffering, is to be realized. Is to be realized means you have to reflect, contemplate, inquire, and develop the wisdom. Then you develop the meditation. Then after that, the third turning will happen. This enlightenment, which is a cessation of all suffering, Nibbana, has already been realized. That's why the third turning is always has already been realized. Then the fourth noble truth, which is the noble eightfold path, is it? There is a noble path, noble eightfold path that will lead to the end of suffering. There is the first turning. Then the Buddha said, this Noble Eightfold Path, which will lead to the end of suffering, is to be cultivated. That's why knowledge about Noble Eightfold Path is not enough. You have to cultivate it. That's why Noble Eightfold Path involves cultivation, so that it can become a part of you. It can become a living reality where you can live it. Then the third turning is very beautiful. He said, this Noble Eightfold Path has already been cultivated. Oh, means you're already enlightened. So this is the way the Buddha teach. And these are the three turning that you have to develop. Because in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha mentioned, even he himself at that time has to understand this Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 mode. Only he can have the enlightenment and the understanding to proclaim that he is the fully enlightened one. Yeah. What more living being? Okay, so with that, I will end today's sharing. Yeah?
Sadhu, 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 sadhu. We thank Brother Teo for his very clear elucidation of the essence of the Buddha teaching that hopefully lead us to a better understanding of the true nature of dukkha and how to attain the cessation of dukkha. Is there any question? It's already 11:15 and we just entertain one or two questions. Or just one question. Any question? If not, maybe I just ask one question.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, you all can ask me any question. Don't worry. Whatever you want me to clarify, you can ask. Yeah.
Yeah, Prabhupada just want to mention about the cause of dukkha, which is tanha, and the three forms of tanha. One of which is the vipava tanha, translated as a craving for non-becoming. So, what's the difference between this vipava kama and the aspiration of a practitioner to attain the cessation of aging, sickness and death? I mean, to be reborn again.
Okay.
What's the difference between these two?
That one is a very good question. You see, when you make aspiration, it's not a craving. It's not a desire. It's an understanding. And how you make aspiration? Because the Buddha has taught you, you invoke the power of merits. Because merits are wholesomeness that you have developed through your cultivation. You have the 10 meritorious actions that give rise to merits. One of them is respect, reverential salutation. The other one is dana, generosity. Even you keep your precept, that is a meritorious action. It's very powerful. Then when you meditate, it's a meritorious action. When you listen to Dhamma and straighten your view, it's meritorious action. When you share merit, transfer merit, rejoice, provide service to community and the Buddhist society, they all constitute the 10 meritorious action. Then when you invoke the power of this merit which you have cultivated for causes and conditions to arise, because you never crave, you allow nature's law to arrange so that you can avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise, so that Nibbana can be realized soon as possible. Then this aspiration will go into the nature's law and it will arise. But the tanha part, bhava tanha and vibhava tanha, this is a craving. Craving to be. Like Ajahn Chah said, don't try to become an arahant. That becoming is delusion. There is no such thing as you becoming an arahant. Understand that? Then you will ask me, hey, during Buddha's time, he said, this disciple arahant, that disciple arahant, where got no arahant? God. But that one is not a becoming. That one is born of understanding. They know this form and mind is not them. Understand that? That's why when they realize the enlightenment is through the nature, the insight in the phenomena, and understand all this, then they know this form and mind, when it's connected with this wisdom, does not suffer anymore. That's why this form and mind is enlightened. You can call it Sotapan, Sakadagami, Anagami, or Arahant, or Bodhisattva, or Buddha. like Sakyamuni in that life. But that one is not him, understand? That's why there is no Sakyaditi, no self-delusion. So don't try to become. When you want to become, that is craving to be. That's why it's tanha. But when you know and understand the nature's law that govern all this, as long as you cultivate, then you develop the wisdom, then the mind awaken, then the end of suffering will arise when the craving is already abandoned. When there is no more delusion, you don't have to crave for anything. Thing is just the way it is. When there is condition, it will arise. When condition cease to be, it will cease to be. You can follow, because this is the difference. That's why they ask Buddhists, is ambition a type of craving? I want to be a doctor. I want to be an engineer. This is very common, isn't it? We strive to be successful in life. Is this a craving? If you crave and want to be, of course, it's a craving. But when you have the wisdom and understand that society's law, like nature's law, they govern the award of degree, understand? So if you study properly, then you can get a university that is recognized, that allow you to study that professional field. Then when you pass the exam, you will graduate and you will become an engineer or an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer. So this is understanding, then you work towards it. But if you try to crave and desire for it, what you do? They call in Cantonese, kang ang le, means you want to deceive and cheat your way out. You try all sorts, then you fail. Then you try to go and buy a degree. Now there is a lot of online thing. You can have your PhD, your master degree, everything online, without even going to university. And some more daring. No need to have certification from them. They create their own. Last time there is a famous mayor, doctor something. They found out later on that his degree is fake. He never graduated from that university with a PhD. So there are a lot of such circumstances. So when you do it through unscrupulous means too craving, too desire, then it becomes tanha. But when you understand and you work towards the nature's law to realize it, it's not an ambition. It's not a craving. Ambition can be a pure ambition. I aspire to become an engineer. Then it becomes an aspiration as well. Then you can invoke power of merits. I determine to study hard. I determine to fulfill the requirement. I don't crave. I don't become miserable when I fail, because I know if I did it appropriately, causes and conditions there, then I will fulfill the requirement, then I will be awarded the degree. And then there is no conflict, there is no craving involved. This is pure aspiration. That's why you aspire to become something. You don't crave to become something. So nature's law, you have to understand. It can bring about the causes and conditions for you to realize things. And when you do that, there is no entanglement with karma, because you invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions to arise for you to realize. You don't interfere. That it will go according to nature's law. Then there is no karmic consequences. So that is aspiration. Craving, there is a strong will behind, a desire to be. And you can be unscrupulous. You do with your thought, you will it. And you to deceive, you will also try to achieve it. And that is craving. And that one has a lot of suffering. When people caught you, when your whatever deceitfulness has been exposed, you get into big trouble. That's how suffering comes about. But if you aspire and do it accordance with the law, or nature's law, there is nothing to hurt you. Nothing can backfire on you, understand? It's a pure aspiration. You do with your understanding. Okay? Hope I have answered your question.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Dio. Once again, thank you, Brother Teo, for sharing with the Dharma that lead us to a better appreciation of the nature of dukkha and how we overcome dukkha.
The Buddha's teaching, very important. So that you know who the Buddha is, how special he is, so that you can be proud to be a Buddhist. You don't have to lower your head. A lot of Buddhists, I'm a Buddhist. You dare not like confidently say, I am a Buddhist. And this Dhamma, this teaching has helped me so much. You dare not speak out to others. Maybe you dare to tell fellow Buddhists. When you have this understanding, this confidence, there is no problem at all. You can relate to life. Everything is very scientific, the Buddhist teaching. Nothing mystical on us. You don't have to believe anything according to the Buddha. He said he is not God. He is just a human being like you. And human being can become Sammasambuddha if you really have the understanding, the faith, the sincerity and the perseverance to go this way which he has shown it to us. That's why the Buddha is a very, very special being, very unique living being. That's why you have faith in his nature, you will progress very fast. You will have great respect and gratitude towards him. Yeah. Okay.
So I'd like to invite Brother Teo to lead us in the sharing merits this morning.
Okay. We will do it in Pali. We will chant the first one is sharing our merits with the Deva. So you calm your mind down. You recall to mind all of the meritorious action that you have cultivated over the last 1.5 hours or so. These are the wholesome mind state and merits that you have developed. And now you can use it. First is to share them with the devas so that they can help protect the sasana. And you are a cultivator of the way. That's why you are part of the sasana. You help to maintain the sasana. You help to keep alive this teaching, the Buddha sasana. Then after that we rejoice. Then we share merits with all the other departed ones and all the other beings who can receive them. Then you can make your aspiration or invoke the blessing for the nation. All these are possible. Then when you are back at home, you can also invoke power of merits for whatever wholesomeness that you want to arise. So now we will do it in Pali, sharing our merits with the Deva. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakkhantu Loka Sasana Itta Vata Chamihi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhiya Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Ipmina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo Satta samagamo hotu Yawa nivana patiya Sadhu Sadhu And pay respect to the Buddha. Then we end. Thank you.
Buddhang Bhujemi Dhammang Bhujemi Sanghang Bhujemi